Hi dudes, and welcome to the best things about pro wrestling this month. The show where we talk about some of the best things about pro wrestling this month, whether it's a match, segment, character development, or anything between. This is a show where we talk about some of the best things about pro wrestling in any particular month. I'm Omar, the same host that should be as enthusiastic as passionate and enthusiastic as Jim Ross after uttering the word David Busters, damn it.
Yeah, David Busters, damn it.
So before we get to the show, I want to say, yeah, apologies for missing the month of March. I was supposed to record it back in... I was supposed to do a WrestleMania prediction show and the things that we talked about in the month of March. There was not going to be a guest. I was going to have a guest, but he kind of bailed on me the last minute. I hate that fucking shit. That shit is annoying, but it is what it is. That's a different rant. But yeah, I did miss the month of March, so apologies for that. And also, like, by the time I was going to upload that show, it was going to be extremely irrelevant. So I was like, yeah, let me just avoid that shit. And let me just avoid the show and just record the month of April. So yeah, before we get the podcast out of the way, let me get the housekeeping out of the way. Of course, follow me on Twitter at Omar the Player Guy. Follow me on all the social medias: Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, and YouTube. That would be Best Things About Pro Wrestling this month. And also hit that 5 stars on Apple Podcasts and Spotify to boost up the algorithms. I really, really appreciate that. And if you actually write a review on Apple Podcasts, I will shout you out. So do that for me, please. So yeah, I love repeating myself. Hit that 5 stars on Apple Podcasts if you love repeating yourself. But yeah, before we get this out of the way, let's talk about the things that truly, truly, truly matters. And that is the pro wrestling industry. Specifically, let's talk about the lawsuit that happened. Because that was not a morale booster, because that shit was so fucking messed up, bro. And this kind of proves that WWE has a racism problem. And I know you're probably hearing this like, yeah, no fucking shit. Vince McMahon has had a WWE or WWF had a racism problem since at least the fucking 80s, when he basically chokehold the entire territories and basically created a monopoly in the business. You're like, yeah, no fucking shit. But whether it's, you know, X-Pac putting on blackface, whether it's Vince McMahon saying the N-word on television, whether it's, you know, Hakeem the African Dream, or any of the racist, bigoted fucking stuff, this kind of proves that WWE has a racism problem. And despite what we're seeing in front of the scenes, behind the scenes, that mentality has never, ever fucking changed. And it also kind of proves that Vince McMahon should be out of the fucking creative team, because honestly, that dude fucking sucks. And he deserves nothing but the absolute fucking worst. Because honestly, he doesn't belong in the creative team. And this is fucking awful. Whether it's, I don't know, Reggie putting on a fucking cage because, you know, black people, animals. Or the fact that they had Mansoor, you know, a Muslim Saudi guy, be behind at 9/11, despite the fact that he was fucking 6 years old. This proves that we don't need Vince McMahon part of our creative team. And number two, despite what some people say that they're not unqualified to talk about this shit, I will talk about this shit, because you want to know why? Yes, this is a show where we talk about some of the best things about pro wrestling this month, but if I have to give one negative that happened in the month of April, is hearing about this shit. And this shit pisses me off too, because Vince McMahon created this environment where the writers were too fucking comfortable stating their ideas and setting their fucking ideas, because it's so fucking bad. It's so fucking awful. And this kind of proves that Vince McMahon does not belong in the creative space at all. And hopefully and look, it just fucking sucks. So fuck Vince McMahon, fuck those writers, and fuck bigotry. And hopefully at some point he's out of here, but that would never happen. And hopefully we could move past this, because let's be honest, man, the morale was so high when Vince wasn't here. Like, creative was getting better. Monday Night Raw was actually watchable, to the point where I was looking forward to watching a 3-hour fucking pro wrestling show, which I would call you crazy if you heard me saying that like 2-3 years ago. So yeah, it sucks. Vince coming back, it just made the shows a lot worse. Just look at Raw after WrestleMania 39. He was behind that shit. That shit was so fucking awful. So yeah, fuck Vince McMahon. Fuck the creative team. Fuck the creative team that were behind that shit. And most importantly, I hope that Vince McMahon is not here anymore, because this shit fucking sucks. Let's talk about the things that we actually like, aka the theme of this fucking podcast. So, let's talk about the honorable mentions. So, honorable mention number one is the feud between Bobby Lashley and Bronson Reed. So this is some, to quote Big E Langston. Why did I say Langston? He hasn't been called Langston in like many, many fucking years, but whatever. Bobby Lashley and Braun Strowman's feud, to quote Big E, this is some big meaty men slapping meat kind of action. And I fucking love it because number one, it gives Bronson Reed something to do. You know, the same guy that defeated Kazuchika Okada, by the way, that fucking guy. The fact that they didn't have nothing for him better else to do up until this fucking feud is criminal. So I'm happy that he's starting in a fresh feud with Bobby Lashley, because not only Bobby Lashley needed this feud, but also Bronson Reed. Both of these guys need something to do. So the fact that they're fighting against each other, I think it's great. Now you have Austin Theory putting in the title scene, which I also do think he has no opponents to face against. So I think putting them all three kind of makes sense, despite the fact that it feels very, 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 very fucking random. But yeah, speaking of things that was random, Seth Rollins versus Omos. What the fuck was that? That shit was so fucking random, but you know, it is what it is. This one was the triple threat match at Backlash for the US title. That feels random, but at the same time, it kind of makes sense. So, but yeah, I wish, but you know, it is what it is. I'm liking what they're doing with Bobby Lashley and Bronson Reed so far. So, you know, also Bronson Reed's theme song fucking slaps, because WWE's theme song, they're just awful these days. But one of the things that isn't awful is Bronson Reed's theme song. And Johnny Gargano's theme song, but yeah, well, majority of theme songs either terrible, they're really bad. Like the WWE theme song division, or the theme song making division, that's a weird fucking phrase of me saying that, but you get my point. The theme song making, the people who are in charge of making music, Dev Rebel, that shit fucking sucks, man. They're just, so far there hasn't been, I could count by one hand how many bangers they had so far, because that shit was terrible. To be fair, that's exactly what I felt about a CFO's or CFO dollar sign. They were terrible at first, but they stepped it up within like the next 2-3 years. So it could happen with Death Rebel, but for now it's just really, really fucking awful. Their theme song, the theme song is so bad, and especially the way they put their drums, you know, the way it's just, the drums is so like very unnecessary and so like feels very plasticky and all. So yeah, it feels so kind of plasticky and stuff. So, yeah, not plastic, but just feels so odd, because it doesn't have the psh, you know what I mean? The drums, especially the drums, right? But yeah. The second honorable mention is... The second honorable mention of this show is Roderick Strong's debut at AEW. Now, most people thought, because of the initial, they thought Sean Ross Sapp was going to show up, and that was going to make a lot of the fans happy, I'm pretty sure, because that dude is fucking hated for some weird reason. I think the dude is great. I just think they hate him because he claps back, because they talk shit to him and then he talks shit back. So, you know, he's one of those like fuck around and find out, because honestly, I don't blame him. I would do that shit too. Speaking of Twitter, he does that shit on Twitter. So follow me on Twitter. I don't remember the player guy. So yeah, Roderick Strong made Impact, and no, he didn't show up on Impact Wrestling. He showed up in AEW Dynamite. I think that was last week's. Not that last week, this was a few days ago. I don't know why I'm saying last week, but you get my point. It's the latest episode of AEW Dynamite, where him and Adam Cole reunited, and he basically took out Jericho's Appreciation Society after Orange Cassidy and Serpentico. After Orange Cassidy and, I'm forgetting his last name, fuck, you get my point, right? So, yeah, they failed to get rid of Jericho Appreciation Society, and then yeah, Roderick Strong came out with Killswitch Engage. No, not It's Fire Burns, but the other famous one, I'm forgetting that song, but it's a very popular one. But yeah, he took on everybody. So yeah, the Innovator, or the Blackberry Core, is debuts on AEW, and he is All Elite. So I'm very happy to see him back. All I can say is that I hope Bobby Fish comes back to AEW, and if Kyle O'Reilly comes back, I want to see him come back as well from the injury. So yeah, we'll see what happens. I want to see Undisputed Era versus Jericho Appreciation Society at Blood and Guts. That's money. If Bobby Fish shows up, because I think he's with Impact, if I'm not mistaken. So, it is what it is. To quote himself, you know, where's the lie? You know, where's the lie in having a great match with, you know, the Undisputed Era, I'm using air quotes because they can't use that name in AEW, versus the Jericho Appreciation Society. So that match could be a fucking banger if, like I said, Bobby Roode shows, not Bobby Roode, Bobby Fish shows up. Speaking of Bobby Roode, I hope he does well, because I think he has a spinal injury, and I don't think he's going to come back anytime soon, because I don't think he's ever going to... I think that dude should think of retirement, because if I'm being honest, that dude is like, I think he's almost 50 at this point, and he should really, really be thinking about retirement at this point, because, you know, he had a spinal fusion, he had a spinal, like, back surgery, similar to Randy Orton, and I feel like Bobby Roode's status in professional wrestling and Randy Orton status is one of those things where, like, they should be thinking of retirement, because yeah, it is not looking good right now. So I'm hoping they both have a speedy recovery. I think Randy Orton's gonna come back soon, but Bobby Roode, yeah, I'm hoping nothing but the best. So yeah, like I said earlier, Roderick Strong showing up to AEW, that was great. That was some, to quote Vince McMahon, some good fucking shit. So yeah. Honorable mention number three is The Miz versus Seth Rollins on the 17th episode of Monday Night Raw. The Raws after WrestleMania, especially the Raw after WrestleMania 39, was really, really bad. But even the Raws after it has been, it's better than the Raw after WrestleMania 39, but that's not saying much, because I feel like Raw, especially the past few weeks, have been really, really mediocre. And that is, like I said earlier, because of the Vince McMahon fucking influence, you know, him changing the scripts on the fly. They're not terrible, but they're just not very engaging as they were before WrestleMania. Because not even before, like before a few months ago, when I was, like I said earlier, I was looking forward to watching these shows. So honorable mention number four is The Miz versus Seth Rollins on the episode of 17th episode of Monday Night Raw. Yeah, the Monday Night Raws have been very, very mediocre in my opinion. So let's hope after Backlash they pick things up, because they've not been very good shows as of late. But that match was really good. And it makes sense, because remember that Backlash, that 2018 Backlash pay-per-view? That pay-per-view fucking sucked. But one of the things I liked about the show was, I think it was the opening match between The Miz and Seth Rollins. These two guys have incredible chemistry. And that match kind of reminded me of that Backlash 2018 match, because that match really, really ruled. But that show didn't rule, because Backlash 2018 was, I would say, one of the worst pay-per-views of all time, in my opinion, because it was really, really that bad. But that match was fucking great. It was the only good thing about that show. And this match kind of gave me that flashbacks. It was a little bit, not even a little bit better. It was like the same quality of, same like high quality as it was back in the 2018 Backlash show, because that show fucking sucked. So yeah, that show fucking sucked. And you know what also doesn't suck? My next honorable mention, that is Rhea Ripley versus Charlotte Flair for the SmackDown Women's Championship at WrestleMania 39. Yeah, that match had zero build. That match had zero build, considering the history that they had. As Rhea, they mentioned it that, you know, one of Rhea Ripley's the thing that she couldn't go over was beating Charlotte Flair, and it happened at WrestleMania. It happened, I believe, at the Money in the Bank pay-per-view in 2021. So the fact that they didn't stretch that storyline out and they just had maybe a couple of segments kind of proves that that build kind of proves that they had a story there. They just didn't stretch that story out, which is weird, because that's what WWE, they love stretching storylines out. I mean, look at the Bloodline thing. That shit is not even interesting now with Roman Reigns being out of the picture right now. They love stretching that shit out, but this is one of those builds where they should have stretched that storyline out. But yeah, that match was great. Great match. They gave them a crap ton of time that had a crap ton of action. That match really fucking ruled, and I'm happy that Rhea Ripley is now the champion. We'll see what happens from there, because that division, that women's division, is really, really fucking awful. That is one of the weaknesses of Triple H's reign as the head of creative, is that it really fucking sucks that the women's division has been really, really fucking pissed for. It is for piss poor, if you know what I mean. Huh? But yeah, it's really fucking bad. But this match was great. And it kind of didn't need to main event that show, because that was as the rumors originally intended. No, but at the same time, it was a very, very good match that did a great job on telling a great story that had a happy ending, which is Rhea Ripley winning the fucking championship. So yeah, the last honorable mention is a funny story. It's a fucked up but kind of funny story, and that is Ted DiBiase Jr. stealing $1 million in federal funds. You know, hit that music. Like MJF, he's keeping kayfabe alive, which is with his rich person being greedy kind of gimmick. So basically, what he So what it states in the report is that he basically took federal funds specifically for the emergency food program. He stole $1 million from like the emergency food program in the state of Mississippi. And I'm gonna sit there, bro. That shit is fucking terrible, man. But it's so funny too, because it's like, it's so random. And it's so funny and random, but also kind of fucked up at the same time. So like, you're getting the best and the worst thing about pro wrestling this month. So it's like a mixture of both. It was fucked up, but also extremely, extremely funny. Speaking of extremely, extremely funny, I mean, we haven't heard of this man since like at least 2012 when he left. And he also kind of proved that with every Dwayne Johnson and Randy Orton, you have a Ted DiBiase Jr. And I think it has to do with the fact that while he had a fantastic look, he was nothing like his father. His father was a shit talker, and he was far from a shit talker. Now, you're probably thinking, well, you know, he could have benefited a Paul Heyman. You know, Brock Lesnar was a terrible talker, but at least he has, you know, Paul Heyman. Well, Paul Heyman wasn't in the company at that time. I believe Ted DiBiase teamed up with Maurice, and with that French-Canadian accent, that couldn't work. I feel like, in my opinion, I do think at some point he could have benefited from teaming up with Dolph Ziggler and Vicky Guerrero. I think Vicky Guerrero could have literally boosted up his star power, in my opinion. Because honestly, the dude was not a good talker. But I do think one of the person other than Dolph Ziggler that needed that kind of that shit talker, in my opinion. I mean, she wasn't really a shit talker, but she was a great like heel magnet. Was Vicky Guerrero? I think he could have benefited from joining Vicky Guerrero. But that's just me. It is what it is. Yeah, that story was extremely fucked up, but also extremely funny that he basically pulled off a reverse Reverse Robin Hood is what I'm trying to say. When I thought of Robin, I thought of Robin, you know, Batman's sidekick. I don't know why. But yeah, you got my point. He basically pulled a reverse Robin. So yeah, let's just get into the main show. And the main show is going to be me and my guest at this time. He is my editor-in-chief at bodyslam.net. Yes, I am back in the writing game. Yes, I did retire the site, but yeah, I'm still writing for bodyslam.net. I wrote like 10 articles so far, and he is my editor-in-chief. That's my man, Corey Barron. Corey Barron? Man, I fuck up names, so apologies for that. So yeah, here it is, me and Corey Barron. Barron? Talking about the best things about pro wrestling in the month of April. My guest at this time is a person that basically sends me ideas to write for bodyslam.net because I'm a contributor. And because, well, here's the thing. Writer's block is a real thing. And he also writes news for bodyslam.net. And if you can't tell, he's one of the second hosts I've ever had that works for a wrestling site. Wait, it's actually my third because I had Andrew Thompson and I had Chris Muller last year, so that's cool. I'm here with Corey Benning. Corey, how's it going?
I'm doing good, man. Doing very good today and looking forward to talking about wrestling.
I mean, it is the theme of the show, right? Talking about the things we like, you know? Exactly. Yep. So, you know, you cover the news a lot. You know, you've been into the clear seas or into the swamp, whatever you call it, you know? You're in the both sides of the aisle. So I'm curious, since you know what's going on in professional wrestling, you write news every single day, reading those articles and unfortunately listening to those podcast interviews where like the old wrestlers are like, you know, you see, you know, like me, like they say like every 5 seconds. Yeah. So I'm curious. So what are your thoughts on the month of April? Like, was it good? Was it bad in terms of professional wrestling? I know WrestleMania happened, so I'm curious, like, was it bad, good, somewhere in between? What do you think?
I feel like when it comes to the month of April, it's very simple, kind of to just sum it up in news. It was a very paranoia infused month because, of course, with Vince and with WWE being sold, Vince coming back to power. We've been kind of going through it where it's weekly, where we watch WWE product and it's constantly a topic of conversation. Is it a Triple H show? Is it a Vince McMahon show? I think a lot of people believe there are some people on both sides of the aisle, like you said, that are kind of a bit, they're kind of ignoring the reports, the facts of the situation. They're going more with their personal belief. And I think that's putting kind of a chaotic scenario in WWE. In terms of WrestleMania felt like night one was an absolute all-timer, but night two was the opposite. Night two just felt, I believe, as a deflating end to a great start.
Yeah, you know, I was about to say these past three WrestleManias, ever since the WrestleMania that they had that included the two night event, because I remember the, because I wrote an article about this on bodyslam.net. You can check it out. It is one of my editorials. But I said it before, like the first time I remember hearing about a three night WrestleMania was when I heard on the episode of Solomonster. I'm forgetting what number was it, because I wanted to further research on it. But yeah, so. And then they were talking about, like, you know, WrestleManias have been very, very long, 7, 7, 8 hours long. And especially for international viewers, you know, it's tough for them because, you know, basically WrestleMania starts at like 4 in the morning and it ends at like 8 or something. So they were like, should WrestleMania split up into like two nights? And I remember listening to, I was like, that is one of the dumbest ideas I've ever. I was like, come on. I said this, I hated that idea because I was like, you know, like some matches that were on the WrestleMania card should be on like an episode of like Monday Night Raw, SmackDown or something, in my opinion. So it's just cut down the fat basically and make it into like a 4-hour, 5-hour show. But especially at that time where WWE was like signing everybody, it was like, it was never possible. So yeah, anyways, it turned out to be a very good, smooth, the pacing of it is way, way better than it was like when it was a one night show.
Yeah.
But however, the thing that is consistent between all three WrestleManias so far that as the two-night event is that night one is good, night two, not so much.
Yeah.
And so it's one of those things where, like, why is it it's consistent? It's like the Undertaker undefeated streak in the sense that, like, night one is good, but night two is bad. They've kept it, you know, consistently going for, like, the third year in a row. You know, and it's kind of weird to say that the three-night event is like that, but, you know, it is what it is. But I will say about WrestleMania 39, WrestleMania 39 could have honestly been a 10 out of 10 show. It could have been one of the greatest WrestleManias of all time. If I'm being honest, it would have been the greatest WrestleMania of all time since 17. If they had Asuka winning the title, if they had Finn Balor win as the Demon Pain, in my opinion, I could have had Omos win in the opening match. And of course, Cody Rhodes winning the match. But yeah, those matches were very, very good. It's just that the wrong person won. So it's one of those things where, like, WrestleMania 39 was a 7 out of 10 show that could have been a 9.6 out of 10 kind of show, you know, to use my IGN kind of rating scale, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah. So speaking of highlights, you talked about some of the things that you've talked about in the month of April. What was that one highlight that stood out to you in the month of April that you personally enjoy, whether it's a character segment or a character development segment or a match, you know, storyline? What was that one thing, you know, across, you know, Impact or AEW or WWE? What was that one thing in your opinion?
I think there's a couple of storylines, but for me, the main one would have to be Orange Cassidy. And it's more so the fact that he's been doing this for months now, and it's kind of all he defended the title for the 20th time against Bandido. That match was really fun. But the thing about that I love so much about Orange Cassidy's run currently, and I've said it during coverage on Body Slam Swear, is the fact that he is consistently selling for his previous injuries. It's not like this schedule is like not catching up with him. He's constantly coming into title defenses with more injuries. He's got his hand wrapped, he has his ribs wrapped or something. He's constantly carrying more injuries, and he's constantly winning still as well. And
true,
when you put that into comparison with the TNT championship, which has been hot potatoed since its inception pretty much, it feels like Wardlow needs a long run with that as well. But if I had to go with one or two people, one would be Orange Cassidy, and I would say number two would probably be Cody, because once again, even with almost a nonsensical level of booking where he's not on the same brand as Roman anymore. And the fact that he's facing Brock, so it seems to be out of the blue. I'm excited for that, but only because Cody has sold that match for me. I feel like Cody every week is proven, even though he didn't win at Mania, he's still proven again and again and again that he is the guy. He is the man to be the top face in the company now. And I just can't wait to see what comes next from after Backlash, to be honest.
You know, I'm a avid listener of Rob and Maggie's Coexisting podcast. Shout out to Rob and Maggie. And I don't want to disappoint Maggie, but I'm not going to lie. Wardlow stock has went lower and lower and lower, as low as the GameStop stock back in, you know, 2021 when he went. You know what? Yeah. That's actually a perfect comparison if you think about
it. Perfect.
Wardlow stock in the company is like GameStop. It was at an all-time high like a month or so ago, like whatever month ago it happened. And then like a few months later, it just went. Like, it was just terrible, terrible, in my opinion, you know?
Yeah, the problem with Wardlow, I feel like, is he's kind of almost stagnating, and he's been stagnating since Double or Nothing.
He has been stagnating, I agree.
Because at the end of the day, with Wardlow, we all know what we're waiting for. It's the same thing we were waiting for going into Double or Nothing last year. It was getting to see Wardlow and MJF. It's very clear that when MJF does end up dropping the AEW World title, we all know who it's going to be. It's going to be Wardlow for the story, simple as that. But for the moment, and then, like, that's the thing. Once it was announced that Punk was injured back then, I don't know if you remember, but Wardlow had that promo where he said he wasn't going to go after the interim title. He was waiting for the real champion to come back. And in that time then, he decided to go after the TNT title. And ever since, he's been chasing the TNT championship or holding it. So it feels like, again, they've just been trying to keep stuff going for him while they're waiting for Max to complete his reign. And then Wardlow can take the title off him. And that's when they'll push him to the max. But they run the risk of, as you said, driving a stock down further and further. And I don't think Aaron Anderson is the way to fix that.
Yeah, I agree. Speaking of AEW, and you mentioned Orange Cassidy earlier, that is my first best thing about pro wrestling this month. And specifically, it was Orange Cassidy versus Buddy Matthews for the AEW International Championship, which was it happened on the AEW Dynamite episode a few weeks ago. I don't have the date of mine specifically. I know, like, I'm a podcaster and I'm supposed to have notes on, but I didn't write notes for that. Apologies for that. But yeah, so for the AEW International Championship, it was Orange Cassidy versus Buddy Matthews. I'm telling you right now, WWE lately has been very disappointing me when it comes to television programming. So much so that I feel like in the month of April, in my opinion, you know, the A in April is AEW, in my opinion, because I feel like AEW has kind of carried my enjoyment for wrestling this month. Because I'm not gonna lie, ever since that Endeavor and then Raw after WrestleMania 39, which is, we all know that it was one pile of shite, to use your analogy, to use your dialect, but you know, AEW has, in my opinion, carried my enjoyment for professional wrestling. And that person, to me, one of the personas that has done that is Orange Cassidy, because in my opinion, his AEW International Chip, in my opinion, is, you know, when people think about what is the most the title reigns that nobody talks about, I would say that it's his title reign. He's been consistently great. He's defended across everybody, across different performers, across different styles of wrestling, and I think he's done great things. And it proves that he can pretty much work with anybody. I mean, kind of proves that, like, within a year or two, I think you're looking at a AEW World Title kind of contender, in my opinion, and not even a few years. In my opinion, maybe 6 months. A couple months. I think that person, in my opinion, and this is, I don't know if you agree with me on this, but I feel like MJF, the title that MJF should lose to, in my opinion, is weird for me to say this. Honestly, it's Hangman Page, considering that MJF beat Hangman Page like a few times, so they could tell the story about how you've never beaten me before. There's another obstacle that Hangman Page can go through, and they could use that base as a base for storytelling. They could just stretch out, because simplicity is the beauty when it comes to professional wrestling. And simplicity is also the beauty of Orange Cassidy as a character, in my opinion, and also the championship. So what are your thoughts on, number one, what are your thoughts on the match itself? And if you don't remember much about the match itself, because it's been like a couple of weeks now, what are your thoughts on Orange Cassidy as the AEW International Championship? Because you said that you've enjoyed it so far, in your opinion.
Yeah, the thing is with that match with Buddy, like, it was just like every other title defense for him. The thing is with Orange Cassidy is he doesn't wrestle the same match twice. Like you said, he faces all different kinds of wrestlers. He faces all different kinds of wrestling styles. So while he has his normal trademark moves, you've got Beach Break, the Orange Punch, etiquette, his transitions and stuff, he adds more to his game. And at the same time, he's still playing this character that isn't too bothered by it all. Like, we know his character. A lot of people know it. It's not a very serious character, but we're seeing more and more. And I think it really started around Forbidden Door last year when he faced Will Ospreay. I feel like a lot of people are starting to open their eyes and realize, holy crap, Orange Cassidy is really, really good in the ring.
He is.
He always tells a story. Doesn't matter who he's facing. And the thing is, I believe it was Brian Cage he defended against at one point. I might be wrong on that. But there was one particular match. I'll get back to the buddy match in just 2 seconds. But there was one particular match where he was billed into a scoop slam. And it was a much bigger opponent. I believe it was Cage. And that's what he did. He eventually built up, hit the scoop slam, straight away hit the Orange Punch after, and got the win. So he told his story. And that's the thing with Orange Cassidy with every single different match. There's always a new story. It doesn't matter who it is. If it's Bandido was coming off for wrestling in Belgium, Netherlands, I believe, and in Mexico, and other countries as well. So again, great challenger for him. And the thing with Orange Cassidy's reign that I love is he tends to open Dynamite with a title defense a lot.
Yeah.
So he's kind of a familiarity straight away when he comes out. But when you go back to that match with Buddy Matthews.
I do that too. As a WWE quote-unquote shit, I do that all the time. I call Brian Danielson Daniel Bryan all the time, but go ahead.
And that match in itself is just, once again, another a great example of the fact that he can work with anyone. Because Buddy Matthews, if you could really put him into a style, you'd put him into the same style of Kenny Omega, where he can do a bit of everything. He's fast, he does strikes, he does great wrestling moves. And that's the thing. In that match with Cassidy, he broke out a lot of moves that we don't see a lot of because he's in a trio at the moment. And it was very physical, very stiff match. I remember that. And that, again, different match for every opponent for Orange Cassidy. I think, realistically, 6 months, if it were up to me, Orange Cassidy would be challenging for the title. I don't know if he would win the AEW World title, but there is an immense story to be told there between MJF and Orange if they decide it. And in terms of the international title reign that he currently has, I have no idea when he's going to lose it. I don't know who he should lose it to. But I genuinely don't think it's in any danger of being stale either.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned about how, like, you don't know when Orange Cassidy or who Orange Cassidy is going to lose to, because it's like, you know, I think AEW's biggest problem, in my opinion, is that their roster is way too bloated. And it's one of those things where, like, it's a great thing because you have so many options, but at the same time, it's like, it's just so much time, so many hours of television that you want to showcase. I don't know if you could really showcase anybody, which is why AEW has done kind of a decent job in writing like mini side storylines, in my opinion, like those I call it the Otis and Mandy Rose storyline, in the sense of like it's not the main storyline, but it's pretty, that's WWE's biggest problem for like a very long time. But I think AEW has done kind of a decent job on that. Now, I haven't watched Ring of Honor, like Tony Khan's version of Ring of Honor. I have not watched any single episode, but I've seen the matches with Athena and Willow Nightingale. That match was pretty cool. I've seen the match, but I haven't watched the whole episode. But I've already had like a NXT Black and Gold era kind of feel to it. So yeah, but I think AEW's biggest problem is their roster, and you know, so many opponents that Orange Cassidy could lose to. I think it's just kind of, it's like it's their biggest strength, but they're also their biggest weakness. And I feel like if I was Tony Khan, I was just, you know, I'll just stop signing anybody for at least another year or so.
Yeah,
but I do think them going to signing Jay White was the predictable outcome, but it's the outcome that makes sense. But honestly, as a WWE shill, whatever you want to call me, because that's a running joke of mine for a very long time, because that's the only thing I've watched is WWE, so that's why I call myself a shill. But anyways, the reason why I've said Jay White, if I was Jay White, I would honestly go to WWE because of the different of opponents that you could face to, like, because I mean, with AEW, he's already faced some of the pro wrestlers out in the roster, but WWE is just a completely new set of people that you could face. But that's just me though. Speaking of Ring of Honor, you like that transition, because it is one of my second favorite moments of April 2023 of Best Things While Pro Wrestling this month, and that is Kevin Owens versus Sami Zayn. Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn versus the Usos at WrestleMania 39 Night 1 main event for the Undisputed Tag Team titles. Now look, I feel like that storyline honestly is a little bit better than the Roman Reigns and Cody Rhodes storyline, mainly because of obviously Sami Zayn, but also Kevin Owens and that friendship, that reunification. That sounded so weird of saying that they're just reunited once again, but whatever. That's my writing talk in me. It's like when, I don't know, like Ricochet saying that I'm going to eviscerate you. I'm like, that doesn't sound like you, man. Whoa. What are you trying to do? But anyways, so that match is great. And for the reason for it is because that emotional storytelling that we've seen from Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens. First of all, I'm so fucking glad that WWE turned this man babyface. I've been screaming on my blog that only three people read for many years. I'm like, turn this mofo into a goddamn babyface. Because this man is very, he has a likable aura to him. Not only that, but he does Sammy for Syria charity. That's great. He's
a great human being.
Great human being in general. Very wholesome guy, too. I've seen like older interviews of him, like when he was in NXT. Just a wholesome guy. And Kevin Owens is pretty much the same deal. And also the difference is also like Kevin Owens is a great heel as well. He could play as a prick, too. But like a prick with a reason. I think both are great. And also like the Usos, I mean, they're both great too. And I've been a fan of them ever since, I think it was 20, like they debuted in 2010, but honestly, they didn't come to fruition as a tag team till 2014. But I feel like between 2016 is when their babyface thing was getting stale. Other than their entrance, I really like their entrance. But then they turned heel. In my opinion, it was the best thing for their careers because that was a way for like to reinvent themselves. And God, they did. And also that theme song is a banger. Yeah. But also the fact that the Usos, I don't know if you've seen that interview with Chris Van Vliet, like I think 4 or 5 years ago, I think it was a WrestleMania 34 scrum or something. I think it was sponsored by Cricket Wireless or something, right? But he said, I think it was Jay or Jimmy, and they basically said that, you know, a WrestleMania one day, you know, they're going to main event WrestleMania or a tag team division or a tag team wrestler is going to main event WrestleMania, or at least like they're going to main event WrestleMania. And I mean, they spoke into the new universe, and that's exactly what happened. And they gave us something that the fans came home happy. You know what I mean? That match was great. And it just storytelling, action, you know, anything you could stay, like, making you, like, stand up and just cheer and say, yo, yes, oh, no, yeah. You know, I think it's great. So, yeah, let me ask you this. You've seen the match, obviously. What are your thoughts on it? Because I'm pretty sure we both can agree that it is one of the best matches of the year.
I definitely think it's one of the best matches of the year, and I think a lot of it... See, there's a very niche side of pro wrestling where I feel like this is a type of match that either you nail it and you knock it out of the park, it's a home run, it's everything you can say about a good segment, or it's the worst because it comes across forced and it's not great. Like, for years we saw John Cena get the snot beat out of him for 20 plus
years,
he'd hit his 5 moves of doom, he'd win the match, and crowds would shit on it. They would not be fans of it. They didn't like it. But when you have the right underdog, you have that guy who really does embody the never say die attitude.
Yeah.
When you see them take punishment, and they still kick out to a crowd. Like, the best part about a near fall is thinking that it is over. It is legitimately over. And there were some times in that match where I did think the Usos were going to actually end up retaining. And that's due to Sami Zayn's ability and Kevin Owens' ability to play Never Say Die Babyfaces. It's something that we've seen Sami do before with KO. We've seen KO do it before with Roman. We saw it in I Quit matches and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
Now, when it comes to the finish of the match itself, I liked that the 1D was kicked out of. I liked that the match ended with a callback to KO and Sammy's history, as well as his history with Jay. I feel like that was kind of, that should have been the end of the Usos teaming for a while. I feel like Jay is a very, very good singles guy. I don't think Jimmy has that same skill. I think Jimmy's an excellent tag wrestler. I think Jay is an excellent tag wrestler, but I think Jay is better as a singles star.
Yeah.
And that's where I would go next after Backlash. Personally, I think the Bloodline has nearly ran its course. I think you're getting to the point now where you're going to have to make a decision if Solo's going to leave as well. But when we talk about back to the match itself, I don't think there's really anything you could book that match differently to make it any better. Even with Sammy and KO having tributes to PWG on the ring gear, that was awesome.
Yeah,
but all in all, I'd say that match is just perfect. I'd have no notes on that match. If someone was to ask me to nitpick, I wouldn't even be able to find anything that I disliked.
Yeah, it's a perfect match, basically. You know,
perfect tag team match, and I'm glad that tag team match managed to make it into the main event of WrestleMania, even if it is a 2-night event.
You know, WWE's biggest problem for many, many years was their tag team division. But I'm glad that they told a story within that division that could honestly be perfect. But honestly, it's just their division. It's like, where do Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens go from there? Because honestly, their tag team division isn't really the best, to say the least. Yeah, go ahead. You were saying something?
I think the opposite, to be honest. I think the tag team... I think Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn have the possibility to go on one of the best tag team title defense runs ever right now, because I feel like there's a lot of really fun tag teams. There's the LWO, there's Judgment Day you could run back.
Yeah.
There's Braun and Ricochet, which are fun. Did I say Street Profits already? Street Profits. there's a bunch of teams in NXT that the Creeds could come up at any time.
Yeah, the Creed brother. Yeah, they're great.
And then there's obviously the chance of them just throwing random people together. At times it does work. And to be honest, I wouldn't mind watching Gargano and Loomis take on Sammy and KO. I think that'd be a very fun match, and it'd just be ridiculous, but I think it would be a good one. I think there's a lot of options for them next, and I hope that WWE do decide to keep the titles on them for a little while.
Yeah, it's spot on. What I'm trying to say is they don't have like enough star power, like they don't have enough momentum that they could build a division. I mean, you could say the same thing about the women's tag team division, which, by the way, I've said it on my blog that only read three people have read, and also three people that listen to this podcast are the same three people that listen to this, that read my blog, that listen to that podcast, to this podcast. By the way, hit that 5 stars on our podcast for that very original joke that I've made for the past year and a half. But yeah, so I've said it many years that I feel like the women's tag team division, the women's tag team championship, in my honest opinion, should, you know what they should do? They should have a Mae Young Classic kind of tournament where they could showcase all the women's tag team, all the women's tag team from all around the world, pull a Triple H style Mae Young Classic. The winner gets like the number one contendership for the tag team titles. And once, you know, that championship, you know, happens, whether wins or loses, whatever, you could honestly build a tag team division, pretty much assign everybody from that list, and just create a solid tag team division that like anybody, that people could be engaged with, in my opinion. Because that division is as cold as ice, in my opinion. Cold as the Antarctica, you know what I mean? So
yeah, it is.
Go ahead. You're saying something?
I think there's potential. I think there's definitely potential in the women's tag division. I think they've always had potential to go far. But it does feel like right now they're just waiting for Ronda to be ready. That's what I feel. Yeah. It feels like Ronda, when Ronda comes back, Liv and Raquel are going to drop. And I don't think Ronda and Shayna will be dropping for a long time, which I think will be a big mistake.
Yeah.
They're bringing up Alba Fyre and Isla Dawn and Caden Chance and
Katana Jens and Caden Carter,
I personally don't think they're ready yet, but at the same time, they're short on women's tag teams. So, yeah, they're going to need all the help they can get.
Yeah, exactly.
I just wanted to say that about the women's tag division.
Yeah, exactly. Speaking of NXT, you're going to like this transition because the third and final best thing about pro wrestling this month is another odd choice, but I do think that he could, that person could honest, I said he, so I gave it away. It's a male wrestler. So I gave it away. One of the best things about pro wrestling this month is somebody that I could see within a year and a half could be NXT championship kind of contender. And as the debut in NXT spring breaking, you know, the slang is Obi Femi. Oh, I'm pronouncing his name. I'm terrible with pronunciation of names today. Today is not my day. But hit that five stars if you mispronounce your names like I do. Which that sucks. So hit that five stars if you mispronounce people's names. But anyways, so yeah, Obi Femi. Debuted on the NXT Spin Breaking Show, and another thing, I think that dude is great. I saw this and I was like, yo, this dude is explosive. He's great. That dude is on fire. I've seen his backstage promo he did. He had a few words at best. Good, you know what I mean. I think that West African accent is everything. I think that dude is going to be great, 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 in my opinion. And I know I've seen some people compare him and Omos because they're both like West Africans. So they're both from that side of Africa and they have that accent. Yeah. But like at the same time, it's like I feel like they're two completely different competitors because one is a decent wrestler. The other one isn't. So I do think that he has a major potential. I just think he should be in NXT just experimenting with not only certain promos, but like certain character talking points, character development, in my opinion. So I think NXT is a perfect home for him. Because if he was in the main roster, I would say, yeah, he's not going to make it, you know, in my opinion. So I feel like NXT is a great place to, like, just hone his craft for a little bit. Just try to, you know, do MMORPG type of upgrades that he needs to do to, like, level himself up, basically. I don't know.
Yeah.
That was an accidental pun because NXT has a show called Level Up, so whatever. Yeah. So what are your thoughts on their debut? At NXT Spring Breaking.
I think NXT has a problem where they don't really book big guys pretty well. But I think that they booked his debut perfectly, and I think he's definitely going to be someone to keep an eye out on.
Yeah.
I really do hope that he doesn't get fed to Braun very quickly, because I feel like that could be a very, very, very easy thing for Shawn Michaels to look at and go, that's a good idea. But at the same time, you could kill either of their own momentum. I think Braun turning heel has been great for him. But I didn't want to see him crush Obafemi, like you said. And hopefully, he does keep getting better. Like you said, I think he's in the right place. He's not exactly anywhere near main roster ready, but that's what NXT is for at the end of the day. So I'm... So he definitely has a very high ceiling, and that's not just for his fault. But yeah, I don't really have much else to say on him at this.
Yeah, exactly. He's a guy that you should keep an eye on. And I said, and I remember like thinking the same thing when Carmelo Hayes debuted. That was before the NXT 2.0 transition happened. I was like, this guy is a star. And when they turned him heel, I was like, yo, and with Trick, yeah, I think that pairing is so good right now. Honestly, I feel like Carmelo Hayes is main roster ready, in my opinion. I feel like they should have kept Braun Breaker in NXT, and they should have called up Carmelo Hayes, in my opinion, because, you know, honestly, I just like Trick, man. I think that dude is hilarious.
Trick is hilarious. He is. He's very, very funny. Very naturally funny.
Also, Carmelo Hayes, like, when he says, rest in peace to all my ops, I'm like, that's a meme. Like, Black Twitter literally uses that clip all the time, which, by the way, speaking of Twitter, follow me on Twitter at Homer the Play Guy, which, by the way, I'm hitting 300 followers again, thanks to Elon Musk and the bot purge that he did back in January. I lost like 40 followers. That sucks. But yeah, I'm gonna hit 300 followers at some point again. But anyways, yeah, so, you know, the Carmelo Hayes is well liked, especially in the Black Twitter, like, they love using that clip, as I said earlier. But yeah, like, Obi-Wan Fema, I think he's great. I think he's going to do great things, and hopefully he doesn't. And I hope for the sake of it, because they're both West Africans, I hope they don't just, you know, just throw them with Omos, you know what I mean? So honestly, I don't think he needs a mouthpiece, not Omos, but Obi Femi, because I think I feel like his actions just do the talking. And honestly, sometimes you gotta elevate the strengths. You know what I mean? Like if some professional wrestler has a weakness, just hide that weakness and elevate his strength. I mean, look at Ricochet when he was Prince Puma. The dude is not the greatest talker, but guess what? He just wrestled. His character is basically like he just does things that no other man could do. You know what I mean? But you could say the same thing about Neville back in the day. So, but yeah, I think he's going to do great things if he honed his craft right. You know, MMORPG style kind of upgrades, level ups. So it is what it is. So yeah, Corey, I want to thank you so much for being part of this podcast. I'm still in, even though I'm in my 11th of 12th episode at this point, I keep forgetting things. That is just a theme of this podcast. I keep forgetting things. I mispronounce people's names, and I just have a weird like brain freeze. So hit that 5 stars if number one you see exactly. I just forget things. So anyways, you get what I'm trying to say is that thank you so much for being part of the show. Thank you so much for being part of this episode, Corey. But thank you so much, guys, for listening to this podcast. So before I let you go, is there anything you want to plug? Your Twitter, Facebook? Why did I say Facebook? You know, whatever.
Just follow BodySlam.net on all platforms.
Yeah, by the way, I'm not saying this because I'm now a contributor, but honestly, the Fightful, BodySlam social media engagement. Oh my God, Cassidy Haynes is going to hate me when I say it. Let's say Fightful. But anyways, BodySlam.net social media engagement has been doing very, very well from like an outsider looking in, and especially, well, using not only the articles that we write, like whether it's mine or Corey Michaels with at Corey MacDazzle, so you can follow him, whether it's him, you know, I think we have like the social media engagement on Twitter has been doing really, really well. So I think I got to thank you and Cassidy Ains for giving me the opportunity to just make fart jokes on a piece about, I don't know, Vince McMahon, whatever.
Yeah.
So I really appreciate that. But yeah, just follow you on Body Slam. That's it, right?
Yeah.
Yep. So thank you guys so much for listening to this. And like I said in the intro, if you do enjoy listening to this for some weird reason, hit that 5 stars on Apple Podcasts, hit that 5 stars on Spotify. I want to hit that 5 star on Apple. I know I've had like 2 ratings so far. I want to hit to like 5 within like a year and a half or something. You guys just boost up the algorithm, because we'd be having some dope conversations. And based on the short clips that does like extremely well, like they do like 1,000 views per fucking video at this point, which is great. Based on those metrics alone, like we be having some dope ass conversations that revolves around liking about professional wrestling. So if you do that, just please just hit that 5 stars. I would greatly, greatly appreciate it. Follow me on Twitter at Arma the Player Guy, and follow me all the social media platforms. It's Best Things About Pro Wrestling this month. You can just find it on there or in the links in the description. So yeah, I want to end this by saying I don't know how to end this other than
yeah.